as a journalist, it's easy. It's easy to cover this story or that story. And what I tell everybody is, as long as we're being fair, we're getting a comment from both sides. We're writing it down the middle. Yes, we support Israel, there's no doubt about it. But if a Palestinian wants to run a letter to the editor and it meets our qualifications, and we're very broad, it's a maximum word count, and you don't libel somebody, and you prove the facts, we're gonna run it. We're not gonna keep it out of the publication. That doesn't sit well with some people. But my belief is, if we're not sharing both sides of the aisle, how are people ever going to try to understand? And there's some great dialogue going on, you know, behind the scenes in Cleveland and other places, you know, outside of the Jewish news. But again, if let's say you and I disagree on who the best, you know, it comes back to sports.
Right.
If you and I disagree on who's the best basketball player ever in the NBA, you tell me it's Jordan. I tell you it's LeBron. If you put your hand up and say, I don't want to hear anything you have to say, we're never going to have a dialogue.
Welcome to the News Nirvana podcast. I'm your host, Nick Parker. The News Nirvana podcast features conversations with media professionals from across the country, highlighting our ever-evolving business models and showcasing the strong and effective journalism produced each and every day. This podcast is made possible to you by the generosity of Town News. Town News delivers solutions, services, and guidance empowering local media organizations to thrive in an ever-changing digital world. Contact Town News today to learn more how they can help you thrive. Connect with them at townnews.com. Bob Jacob, the managing editor of the Cleveland Jewish News and the Columbus Jewish News, welcome to the News Nirvana podcast.
Thank you for having me, Nick. My pleasure to be here.
Okay, here's why I'm kind of excited to have you on. Like me, you started in sports. You were a sports reporter first, and I think that's the best place for any reporter to start.
I'm not going to argue. I wholeheartedly agree with you, Nick. And I think many of the people that we've seen that have climbed the ranks in this business started in sports. You know, growing up, we all loved to play sports. We all enjoyed it. And we just figured, you know, that's a natural next step for us is we're getting paid to work in the toy and candy department, as they used to call them. But it was far from toy and candy. There was a lot of work back then.
I have a good friend of mine who always likes to make fun of the news side. You know, they always get on election nights. They always get pizza and lots of parties. He's like, I'm sports. Every day's big deadline.
Absolutely. We do that at the Cleveland Jewish News and the Columbus Jewish News. We have one late night later than all other nights, and we could be working till midnight or 1 o'clock. And I remind all of our younger reporters who are, you know, not coming up in the daily newspaper business saying, boy, this is a long night for you, right? Oh, man. Yeah. Well, I said, this is once or twice a year in a daily business that people are expected to work through the middle of the night, even till 3-4 in the morning, as you push back a deadline. We did this every Friday and Saturday night in sports, and basically every night of the week when we had a game to cover. So, you know, yes, it's something we've done. We're used to it. The nights, the days, the weekends. I remember working, high school football games till, you know, 10 o'clock at night, writing your story, putting out the paper that night because we were a morning paper, but then you're still an afternoon paper on Saturday at that time or during the week, and then you come back. And you have to work the next morning putting out a paper.
I've always said that sports reporters get an early start on their education in reporting. I think a lot of that is just because when you're covering sports, you get to learn every aspect of reporting. You're writing deadline game day stories. You're writing features. You're writing news as it happens, breaking news. So it really, even though you like to call it the candy store, right? But it still really is just a way to dive into the deep end and learn all of those skills. And I don't know about you, but I started in small community papers, so I had to learn photography too.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And also when you're coming back to the office to write your Little League games, we did cover Little League games, you know, the blue team and the red team, and it was very important. Get those names spelled right, or mom and dad, or what's worse is grandpa and grandma. Sports editor who knows the kids.
Right.
No, you did something wrong. So it's very important to get those names right. And then as you're writing your story, the phones are ringing. Hi, I'm calling in the Little League West game. okay, hold on, I'm in the middle of my story, got to take it. So you're learning to multitask way before people knew what multitasking
right.
was. Multitasking was, you know, putting the jack in the earphone and watching TV. This was doing all that, plus keeping a TV monitor going in the background to see what the, you know, the local pro sports team was getting, so you can get an idea of how that paper was going to look. Just so much to do back then. It was, you know, great times to be covering community softball games and youth sports, which is basically non-existent in many communities today.
I remember my first interview. I sat for probably an hour or two with the editor of that paper. And at the end of the thing, he asked me this question: can you shoot photography? I answered no. And his reply was, you're hired. Here's a camera. You're shooting Friday Night Football tonight.
Yeah, I got really lucky when I went into business in 1978. The small community paper I worked for had just decided it wasn't working to have a reporter walking the sidelines, taking notes, and trying to take photos. So they hired a gentleman to take photos and go to a few games. So I was very fortunate throughout my whole career until, you know, I got to the Cleveland Jewish News, and we don't have a staff photographer. So we all learned how to take, you know, become photographers. We invested in some great cameras. Our, you know, publisher CEO, President Kevin Adelstein, really saw the need to get rid of these point and shoots. And, you know, now we're covering NBA finals. We're covering the presidential visits. And we can do it because we've got the proper equipment. You're not, you know, have to be up so close to a speaker. And it's sort of embarrassing. And it lowers the quality of your publication.
So absolutely.
We invested in all that. We could sit in press row. We've got the long, you know, lenses. We've got, you know, everything that we need to do what everybody else is doing. And I think it's very important as the papers survive. And I know we'll talk about that later in this podcast. As papers want to stay relevant and timely, they need to keep up with the trends and what they're doing to require you to, you know, do your job. You've got to have the proper equipment.
Yeah, well, and I think that's a really good point, because as a lot of papers are changing their staffing models, right? We're all asked to do and asking ourselves to do a lot more and often with less. That I think the technology aspect, the equipment part of it, gets more and more important. You've got to have a great camera if you're going to ask your reporter to also stand in as the photographer. They really have to have the equipment they need to make that job a little bit easier. And look, learning to shoot on a modern DSLR is so much easier than when I first got that job, and I was shooting black and white film in a small town in southeast Kansas with, you know, two light poles on the football field.
Yeah, I thought I was going to go in, you know, to photography maybe after my radio broadcast career in college didn't work out. Because, you know, that's another story that, you know, the guy comes in and he says, you're the afternoon drive time anchor on college radio. Here's the local daily newspaper. Start reading it and writing your script. And I said, wow, what do I want to copy them for? That's not what I want. Then I said, well, maybe photography. I've got an old Minolta upstairs. Quickly, I left that business because I couldn't wind that film. You didn't go to the store and buy the roll. You
right.
wound it. And then the other part was something about working in the dark room. It was very dark, and I wasn't seeing what I was doing. So that was out. Then I became a sports writer. It was much easier.
Where did you start?
I started in a small paper in Northeast Ohio called the Painesville Telegraph. It was a family-run publication. The Raleigh family owned four or five daily and Sunday newspapers in a geographic area. I've always worked for either family companies or currently, you know, we work for a board of directors. They don't tell us what to do. They're an overseer. So I've been fortunate in a 40 plus year career to not work for a chain or a, you know, financial global cost cutting company that comes in and just guts newspapers, which we're seeing today. So Painesville Telegraph was about a 18,000 circulation daily newspaper. It was the bigger paper of two in the county. And that's when we had, you know, counties or cities that had competition, which was always nice. You don't see that today. That paper then was gobbled up by the smaller paper, which became a bigger paper.
You mentioned earlier, and I don't want to spend the whole time on sports, but I think this is interesting. You mentioned earlier about the days that we all used to, you know, we'd cover the little leagues and we'd take the phone ins and all those things. And yeah, you got to get all those names right and every hit down there, or mom and dad or grandpa is going to call you. You don't see that anymore. And so I'm wondering, with all of the social media and everybody has one of these in their pockets to take pictures and post what their kids are doing in their teams, is there still room? Is there still a need, do you think, for the community papers to be covering those kind of sports, the youth sports, the prep sports? Is that still a big deal? Is it still a need?
I think it's a bigger need than ever because there's such a void. But unfortunately, a lot of the sports editors or the editors or the publishers don't see that of value. And a lot of times decisions are made based on where we are in our life. So maybe there's a sports editor who doesn't have kids playing. It's not important to him, but the entertainment industry might be. But if you have somebody that has kids that have played, or you come up playing, or you have grandchildren who are playing, you're seeing how important it is. I was able to visit my grandchildren at the other end of the state last weekend for the first time in over a year. We took in one soccer game and two youth baseball games. There were hundreds of, you know, people not only playing at 9 o'clock in the morning, but their parents and grandparents watching. And that to me shows something. And that's important. A lot of places I go, I said, you know, high school football is important. And you're talking about 500 people at a game. I said, yeah, it might be 500. It's 5,000 also. But when you talk about 30 or 40 high school sporting events on a night in your community, that's 100,000 people
right
that are waiting for that. And I can remember when my kids played sports and we traveled around, I would always go back the next day to pick up the local newspaper to try to get that write-up if they were in there. And you don't have that today because people do it on their camera and they type something out and then they coerce it to look like a box score. That has no value to people like us. But a nice newspaper clipping from 1985 that you've got in your wallet of your daughter or your son hitting the winning home run and the pictures on the front page.
Right.
That means a lot more than somebody putting something on Facebook that's going to be seen by, what, 17 people that they already know?
Right. You probably already sent them the picture over text anyway.
Right. You know, you probably were live at the game anyway, showing them. So it just doesn't mean as much later on in life, I think, down the road. I have, you know, newspaper clippings you probably do of your kids. I have a picture when I worked for a different newspaper where we needed a Hanukkah photo, and I was one of the Jewish people at the paper, and it was last minute, and the editor didn't think of it and says, can we come over to your house and take a picture of your, you know, son lighting a candle. He was 4 at the time. I said, yeah. Unfortunately, he almost burned down the house because of cotton. It took long enough to get it. But that's a picture that I have. And what I did is, when that picture appeared on the front page in the newsstands, I had him go out and stand in front of the news box. You can't do that today.
Right. We used to call it refrigerator journalism, right? You want the pictures that mom and dad are going to cut out and put on the fridge for everybody to see when they come over. And I think that's it's hard, I think, in the digital age. And I run an all digital newspaper. It's hard in that digital age, I think, to still come at things with that perspective of how are you still going to be the, not necessarily of record, but you are that record, right? You're the thing that people can look back on. And how do you still do that in the digital world of things?
And a lot of times consultants come in, they're not familiar with your community, or they bring in an out-of-town editor, and he wants to change everything to what he knows worked in his previous community. But many of our cities are unique. Cleveland is different than Kansas City. You know, we know what we want to read in the paper, and you have somebody that comes in and just upends, topsy-turvy, you know, national news, world news, that's important. We're going to start covering this. We don't care about that. And you lose those people and they stop buying the paper and you're sitting there scratching your head like, what did we do wrong? What did we do wrong? Well, you came in and you changed. Readers are creatures of habit, I like to say. And also with newspapers, local, local, local. It's like real estate. Local news. And especially today, Nick, everybody can get their world news. You know, we're in a class. Israel and Hamas are in another pre-war that just, you know, called for a ceasefire. And everybody I talked to, national news, national news. I said, I don't care about the national story. We do have a ceasefire story, but we have 7 pages of local content about this incident. We talked to Clevelanders who happened to travel there a week ago, students who went there 2 weeks ago. We have a Cleveland Jewish person who was assaulted at a riot at a Palestinian rally in Cleveland. We reached out to local professors. We reached out for guest columns. That's different. That's local. It's not what the wires are reporting. Anybody can get that anywhere. And I think a lot of newspapers, not only the Jewish ones, but the secular ones, and my career was 30 plus years in secular newspapers before I switched over here to the Jewish publications, Cleveland Jewish News, and now the Columbus Jewish News. And I brought a lot of those ideas over with us, and other people that have come on board with us, as I mentioned, Kevin, we're all buying into, we're a different company today, and we have to be, than we were years ago.
Well, and every business, right? You want the thing that makes you stand out, the thing that makes you different. And I always say you can get your national and your world news from a million sources, but nobody else is going to tell your community story the way you can.
Absolutely. You want to read about your neighbors and your friends and how things are impacting them. You know, I watch the local television news very rarely, and I sit there and I go like, what was local about that story from New York? That needs to be on the national news, not on my local 6 o'clock or 11 o'clock news. Give me the local story. You know, we have a daily paper in town that has gone downhill pretty quickly, unfortunately. And when there's Jewish holidays come up, they rarely can find a Jewish person in a community of 80,000 Jewish people to write about the holiday. They pick up a Washington Post or New York Times story. That never would have happened decades ago.
I want to push a little bit here, because I think you also are finding success by going a little bit of the opposite. You are your newspapers were established to cover the Jewish communities, but you are pushing back a little bit and saying, I'm going to cover the rest of Cleveland, everything. I'm going to cover the rest of Columbus, everything, because we can, and somebody needs to tell those stories. I mean, you just said it, you're covering the NBA finals, you're covering elections, all of these things through the entire community. And you're not just shining that lens in the one piece of that pie.
Right.
I just mixed metaphors, and I apologize for that.
That's absolutely fine. You know, when I got here just over 10 years ago, I was told by the board chair after I was hired, we want to become timely and relevant. We want to read the important stories in the Cleveland Jewish News before we're reading them elsewhere. And we've done that, and we've even taken it a further step. We've had all our team has bought into that. We're covering city council meetings when warranted in communities that are of interest. And our motto is we try to get everything in the paper or online rather than find reasons not to run things. In Cleveland, we're called the Cleveland Jewish News. Our mantra is anything that's Cleveland Jewish, Jewish news, and now even Cleveland news. Because what happens in the secular world, in downtown Cleveland, in the inner city, probably is going to affect our Jewish readers who may be volunteering in the municipal school district, who are going to the downtown restaurants. And that's, I think, one of our biggest successes, is we're able to cover these. We actually, since the time we spoke preparing for this, I had mentioned, I believe, that we had sued a local community, the community that our newspaper is in. We had sued them for not turning over public records that should have been given to anybody who asked, not just journalists. And that case wrapped up recently after almost 1 year, and we settled and we received everything we had asked for, plus all of our attorney's fees. Think of a weekly newspaper suing the city government. And by the way, the law director has moved on to a private job finally after all that, and they brought in somebody else. But again, we hated to do it, but we wanted to ensure that the community knew what was going on and they weren't forthcoming on things. We're also covering a mayor who's not Jewish in a community that's very Jewish, and he was lashing out at residents, Jewish or non-Jewish, and we covered it. And they have censored him, and he's up for election. And people need to know this. I was at a
Do you think that role, the watchdog role, right, the holding electeds accountable, is that, you said you've been doing this 40 years, is it different now? Is playing that role a little different, do you think?
I think it's much different because many of the secular newspapers, the dailies, we know their staffs have been gutted. Their production schedules may be reduced. Their resources are not as great. A national chain that's coming in and buying up a dozen newspapers, they're having one reporter cover six communities now instead of one or two communities. They're sharing the stories. I think it's changed a lot, and not for the best. You don't have dedicated investigative reporters assigned to cover these types of stories, or enterprise reporters. If you fall into you fall into it. In the last 2 years, we've covered stories that may or may not involve Jewish players, as we call them. Like, there was a teacher in a school district, a band director, who's been accused of doing hanky-panky with students from 12 years ago, and kids are now coming forward. We've covered that. There's a English teacher at a school who was put on leave because the black student said she didn't treat them properly. We covered that. There was a black football coach who was fired by the district, a Jewish superintendent. And we picked up that story, and they rehired him because they were not telling the truth. They said, oh, the State Athletic Association supports us. Well, we called the State Athletic Association, and they told us we never were involved in that decision. They did it. So we're keeping these people, you know, their toes to the ground, as we say. We have, in this lawsuit we were involved, the mayor had made some lewd remarks to two employees who sued him and won. They didn't want to produce the settlement documents. The taxpayer should know that this mayor was responsible for this. Well, it was handled by our insurance company, and they tried to say that's not a public record because our insurance company handled it. We told them that's not how you get around public records. That's a public record. We don't care who handled it for you. There's got to be a settlement on the city books. And we reported that. Some people don't like us. Some do. We also have a situation with one of two kosher butcher in Cleveland has been connected to a vaping slash drug retail empire across the United States. And, you know, we are reporting that. Should we report it? Whole nother issue. I have that discussion all the time.
The News Nirvana podcast is brought to you by Town News, the creators of IQ Audience Plus. IQ Audience Plus replaces your old school, one-size-fits-all paywall with a smarter metering solution that targets visitors with custom offers, converting drive-bys into paying subscribers. Learn more at townnews.com/audience.
Well, you know, the answer is, does it affect our community, right? That's the question you have to always ask. I want to go back, though, to the public records part. You know, that wasn't when I went through school and college. We talked about that and being able to do it and what the open record laws were for our state. But I really don't think I ever did it. I was probably 10 years into the industry before I ever actually filed one. And I almost feel like right now, that's one of the first things we ought to train reporters to do when we get them, is make sure they know how and when to do that.
Absolutely. And the Ohio Associated Press Media Editors Contest was just announced for the previous year, and we won the prestigious First Amendment Rights Award. It goes to one entity, and it's gone to like the Cincinnati Enquirer in the past for their, you know, dealings with courts also. So you're right. I'm not sure a lot of times what they're teaching in college. I know a lot of the college professors, as good people as they are, they've never worked in the media. They're book professors, and they're teaching people what to do because we hire paid interns. We're very fortunate that we're able to have paid interns, you know, during the summer and at other times of the year. Many of the media businesses, it's volunteer work. So we know when they come out of certain colleges, they're going to be pretty good. Other colleges, they're not. I had one person come from a journalism school and said, I always ask them, what class do you like? What class don't you like? And this one to be intern, I can't remember if I hired her. I probably did. She said, I hated that one professor. I said, why? Do you know if we got one name wrong in a story, we failed the class? I thought that was horrible. I said, that's my kind of professor.
Exactly. Because you only need that phone call once.
I said, you don't misspell somebody's names. I said, how do you misspell somebody's name? Did you ask the person to spell the name at the start of the interview? What? I said, did you read back the spelling? What? I said, I can't tell you. And that goes back to what we spoke about a few minutes ago, to covering sports. You go back, and today, and especially when girls' sports was, you know, new in the late 70s, and they were different names. When the boys played, they were usually pretty common names. Girls' names, you weren't as familiar with them. And today, everybody's name is spelled three different ways. And I ask people, you know, how do you spell Nick? Or what are you talking about? N-I-K-K. Well, that would have been my fourth choice.
Right.
Yeah. So you get that as a sports reporter, and you should be getting that. But what I'm finding in a lot of colleges, and I've spoken to some college kids in an event and everything, you know, they all want to be bloggers. They all want to be op-ed writers. They all want to be columnists. When they come to me and I go, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Well, I want to be a columnist for the local newspaper. I said, forget that. Maybe in 25 years, unless you're really good. You've got to pay your dues. You've got to work your way up. Work the streets. Work the sports games. Know the players. There's so many tricks of the trade that we had to do back then before all these reporters have it so easy today. We used to use phone books. Greatest tool out there. Better than Googling somebody's name on the internet. That's a lost cause. You know, there's tricks with phone numbers that I'm trying to teach reporters. There's ways. It's like reporter will say, do you have a phone number? I said, yeah, I do. Why don't you go find it? Well, what should I do? You know, go back to Journalism 101 and have your professor teach you how to track down a person. Okay? If you can't, it's not on the internet. I said, you know what? Call somebody who knows this guy and get his phone number. That's how we did it in the old days.
I had the conversation with a PIO recently, fairly recently, and I was getting chastised because I had called somebody in their office without going through her first, and the conversation ended with but if I called you first, I'm not good at my job. And I think that's what you're leaning to is look, when you come in as a reporter, right, you've got to build those relationships with your sources. Mm-hmm. You've got to know how to find them, know how to get through them so that when you need to make the call for whatever news you're writing, you can just make the call and you get it.
And it's absolutely, you've got to build up the relationship. You got to build the trust. You got to be out there in the community covering events, whether it's at Little League game where you're sitting there with the coach and the parent and the commissioner and the umpire, and you're moving on to being in the mayor's office once a month or once every 2 months, or you're being seen at the meetings. I'll tell you, we had a prominent Jewish person, a patriarch of the city of Cleveland. You know, they said nothing happened without him. He passed away. I knew the players to call. And I always end the call, is there anybody else I should talk to? So this one person who trusted me as the head of an organization, he says, you need to talk to the former mayor of the city of Cleveland. Okay. I said, great. Do you have his phone number? He goes, here it is. Don't tell him where you got it. Okay? Because I've asked those questions.
Well, and that's source building.
And he trusted me. And even if that source that I called, the former mayor, how did you get my phone number? I would say, I don't know, found it somewhere. It's on the internet probably. You're not going to give up your source. But that's how you build sources and relationships. And then that guy that gave you that number who read the story and said, wow, you know what? I got a tip for him next time. He's trustworthy. He's, you know, this same person told me at an event we were covering in Washington, D.C., an annual event, and I was going up to him every day to just get a quick comment about the proceedings. We were covering it locally, getting local reaction again, not what the national speakers, where the Israeli prime minister was there 1 year. It's like everybody knows what he's saying. I want to know what our people think about what he is saying. So he stops me before and he goes, what you're doing here as a newspaper in real time is what you need to be doing. And that, you know, from a guy that doesn't speak a lot and doesn't give praise a lot in the community, meant a lot that we were on the right path to doing what we needed to do. And we've continued it since then.
You used a word earlier, trustworthy, and about building trust. And I want to go back to that because one of the things I kind of want to do with this podcast as we build it is I want to push back a little bit on the national narrative, the public narrative of trust in the media. And that seems to be eroding. But I think what you're touching on, though, by being visible in the community, the beat, whatever you're reporting on, you're covering, by building those relationships, that's how we build and keep the trust, right? If they know us in the community, they're going to trust us. They know what we do. They know who we are. And then from that, I think it can even stair step up that they can, because they know you and the work you do, they can even have a little bit of trust in the other media that they're watching, right? So if you go from a community level to a regional or a national, right, it can extend that way because of personal relationships.
Right. And a lot of times when people, you know, say, I don't trust the media, I said, which media are you talking about? The Cleveland Jewish News and the Columbus Jewish News or the other media?
Right. Define for me the media.
Right. You're all the same. I will tell you, you know, since we're talking about, Palestinian-Israeli conflict right now, which is, you know, seems to always go on. There was a rally several years ago outside the Jewish Federation of Cleveland building, and the Palestinians came over to rally. And I'm thinking about this on my walk this morning, and I said, you know, this is great that they're here rallying, and we all support freedom of speech. Don't think we don't. And I went up to somebody, or somebody came up to me and said, who are you with? And he looked at my credentials. He says, oh, you're the Jewish reporter. I said, and? He says, you're against us. I said, I'm not against anybody. I said, do you know anything about the Cleveland Jewish News? Well, you're Jewish, so you have to be anti-Palestinian. I said, you know, here's my phone. Here's our website. Why don't you take a look at it before you even make a comment? He says, you're all the same. And I said, why don't you go ask your leader here today, who we've interviewed numerous times leading up to this rally, and we'll interview him again today. So you've already grouped us in with all other media to serve your need. And to back to your point is, yes, the more you're in the community, and also what happens is we all make mistakes. We know that. And we are transparent and we correct them. And it's a lot easier to correct your mistake when you've got trust on your side.
You know, absolutely.
People accuse us of, like, the kosher butcher store. Why do we have to write that? You know, well, you know, it's a story we have to share. We're trying to share it from both sides. We want to just present the information and not, you know, and not be biased. There's always going to be some bias out there. I remember when I started, these reporters never disclosed when they owned stocks and they were writing about, you know, the market. And this Los Angeles Times, then all of a sudden the market guru, he'd say, I own shares in XYZ stock. And I think that goes a long way. We also are very transparent. We run disclaimers. If we have a story that includes one of our board members or an employee for some reason, we'll say so-and-so is a member of our board. Doesn't mean they influence the coverage, but we just want the community to know that that person's on our board. In case somebody says, oh, the only reason you did a story is, and then you covered it up. So trustworthy, you know, respect, very important. I know journalism comes in there. If it's 1 to 10, I think we're number 11 now. So it's a bad rap. It's a bad rap. But a lot of it, like you said, Nick, it's justified because of the way we've been operating.
Can we build that back? I mean, is if we get back to or continue? I mean, look, there are a lot of us that are still out there every day in our communities. But do the models of what we're doing work? Can we build that trust back?
No, I don't think they work. And I think it's because, unfortunately, the newspaper business has been declining. I mean, it's been dying since day one in my career, where people said it was a dying business. And
you know, you're showing them.
I'm still here. I think why it can't be is because television, you want to talk about a dying business, let's talk about radio and radio news. Who listens to regular radio now that you have satellite? But with television news, it's become so powerful because it's so immediate. But a lot of those reporters, I don't know where they got. Some of them are very good. But I watch, whenever I watch news or if I'm out of town and I watch, I think a lot of them think of themselves as celebrities. They swoop in on a story, they pick up the local paper, they get a soundbite, and they're out. And, you know, if they put the wrong name of the person on the screen, it's some intern's fault. If they're reporting from the wrong side of the street, they've got the wrong city, it's not their fault. Or at a scene, there's three reporters are sharing the same notes. Why do we even have three TV stations in a community when they're all going to be at the same area reporting exactly the same story? They're not looking for anything extra. We did have, and to tell you what we did, we had a shooting in a parking lot of a hotel here about a month ago. I raced out there. I saw the police had it barricaded. I knew a back entrance. I went around. I was within 50 feet of the dead body. The three TV stations were a mile and a half down the road. They stopped at the first police car, and they were schmoozing all afternoon until somebody came out to tell them what's going on. In fact, I couldn't even see the pictures with my long lens because of the sun. And when I got back to the office, they said, we couldn't use most of your pictures because you had the guy's head in your picture. I said, sorry, I'm just blind shooting, and I couldn't really see what I was doing. It was so, you know, far away.
Right.
I hope you got something where the body was more covered. But these TV people, their reports were all ridiculous. That I saw the, you know, massive manhunt. I said, what manhunt when you just said people are walking their dogs up the street and nothing is barricaded? How do you have a manhunt when people are allowed to walk their dog in front of the scene? But that's what TV says, and nobody thinks twice because TV reported it.
Okay, so you're on the print side of things. How do you compete against that? Is part of that what we're all doing, you know, newspapers are doing with their digital stuff that they're now streaming. We're podcasting right now, right? We're doing that thing. And I'll tell you, in my digital publication, 80% of content is podcast.
Yeah, and I notice more TV people. I mean, they have dozens more reporters than us. They just throw stuff up on their website. There's no style. There's no fact checking for a lot of them. They don't care. It's just a statement from the police, and it's there. That's their story, and it gets clicks. What we do is when we like somebody, we go out and hire them from the TV stations, or we ask them to write for us. We have a partnership with the local NBC affiliate here, and we're running their senior medical columnist every other week in our paper answering questions. We're cross-branding. We also hired a guy from a local radio station to write our sports column. Both of these people are Jewish, to replace our longtime columnist who untimely passed away a few months ago in late December. So we went out, we took a couple months off from a sports column, and we found another Jewish person, and he works for a radio station. So we're going out and we're identifying these people. We have a Pulitzer Prize column finalist who worked for the Daily Papers. When she decided to leave the Daily Paper, we quickly made an offer for her. So we're reaching out to people like this. Can we change what they do on TV? I don't think we can ever change it. The people that follow us are coming to us because they can trust us. Again, that word trust. So they know that local butcher story. We're going to report it every which way. Six, you know, upside down, backwards. We know the owner of the butcher shop. We had a great owner. We had a great story a couple weeks after that with the former owner who said they ruined my name because his name stood on the building. The TV stations, they came in. They shot a video of the outside of the building. They got the dossier from the courthouse, and that was it. No comment from the owner or the former owner. That's what they do.
I think that goes back to all of our old print snobbery, right? It's because we have the space. We're not time constrained that we can tell more of a story if we want to.
Right. We just have to convince, you know, the older generation, we have convinced them. They grew up on the newspapers, not the same newspapers that they read 30 and 40 years ago, but it's still, you know, it used to be said if Walter Cronkite didn't report it, it wasn't news.
Right. Don't you think, though, that I think we're finding, you know, look, for 20 years, we were told write shorter, write shorter, write shorter. People don't have attention spans. You know, if you do a video, 2 minutes, that's all you get. If you do, you know, if you have, you know, 600 words for a story. But aren't we finding, though, now that if you're doing the right content, if you're doing content that people want, they want long form journalism. They want the long story. I mean, look at what you know, The Atlantic, The Athletic. I mean, look at what all these people are doing now that are really digging in on content and finding the audience. I think we're seeing that really wasn't true. People will read the long thing, they'll watch the long video if you're digging in on content that matters.
And it goes back, Nick, to a point I was trying to make earlier. Who came into that newspaper or that television station and said 500 words, max. 30-second max. Nobody's reading your content. Who was that person? That consultant from Kansas City that came to Cleveland, or Cleveland to Kansas City, and didn't know the market? Or did this work at three other, you know, national networks, or, you know, the Gannett's or the Gatehouses or the, you know, Scripps Howard? Somebody came in and said, I want every Scripps Howard paper in Ohio, 500 words, columns here. Every community was different, and people failed to realize that. I've worked with my share of consultants that came in at daily papers, and I just sit there. I'm in amazement when they come in and they say, I want to do this to your front page, and I want to do this. And I asked one of them one time, and he's probably a great person and a well-known redesigner of papers. I said, I'm just curious. Can you show me a few of the newspapers you redesigned? He wouldn't do that because every paper from Los Angeles to Cleveland to Miami to New York looked alike. That was his selling point. He was a consultant. So he said, here's my template. You fit my template. And when he said, take the local sports scores off the front page on Friday night, I looked at him and said, are you kidding me? He said, nobody cares about high school football in Elyria, Ohio. I said, maybe in Dallas, Texas, they don't care on a Saturday morning, but not here in this town. They care about that high school sports game, scores across the front page. And that's part of the problem is, you know, what do you
I kind of want to dig in on news design there a little bit. I spent a lot of my newspaper career as a news designer. And I, by the way, I was that consultant for a while too.
Okay, not all bad, but
no, but here's my question. And look, and it was hard. It was really difficult going into another community that you don't cover, you don't know, right? And I could have all sorts of grand, beautiful ideas, but if I didn't know the community and what they wanted, I couldn't do the best work. But here's my question though. In today's world where, look, you're still doing your own design and doing your papers, but there are a lot of newspapers now that are, the chains have them going to design hubs, right? So they don't have designers on hand. And because we're so much of us are digital and people are getting their feeds right here to read their news stories, is newspaper design still as important? Is that still a thing that we need to work on, which is how we package that story and present it to the reader? You know, who gets 25 inches and who gets 4 inches of story? Is that design and packaging still as important?
To me, it is utmost important. And I work with our young designers all the time. And I tell them, you know, I could be old fashioned, but our readers are older right now. I said, newspaper design is different than a website. There is no design on a website for the most part. It's you slap it up there and everything is boxed and it's in the right thing. But when you read it on a paper, give me a 60-point headline on war, white on black reverse border. And that's what we're doing. And put this box here and understand why you're doing it. And that's what's impressive. I had somebody come up and say, wow, that was a powerful front page last week. At the end of the day, it really doesn't matter. We don't sell that many on the newsstands like daily papers. But when I walk by a newsstand, if I'm interested in a story or something that grabs my attention, I'm going to buy the paper. So to me, packaging it is important, designing it. You know, when you go somewhere and you got 4 or 5 newspapers on the newsstand, do you ever, Nick, go through a whole newspaper of maybe 20, 30, 40 pages to find a story of interest to you or an advertisement? I don't know anybody who does that unless you're waiting for the bus.
or just newspaper nerds like us who, right, Everywhere we visit, we're going to grab one and I want to check the ad counts. I want to see what they're covering.
Yeah, I want to see how the ads are designed. Are they going on the outside of the page or the inside of the page? Or are they putting an ad in the middle of the page,
right,
which papers are doing, or at the top, or is this a sponsored page? But if there's something at the top of the page, a skybox, we call them, or a reefer or an index, and that's what you use for newsstand sales, hey, there's a great recipe on page 32. I would never have known about that eggplant recipe because I'm not looking in a newspaper, but it was on page 1, recipes today. So I looked at it, and that's probably why some of the small hometown papers used to put a list of their advertisers on the front page or the people who died. So, you know, oh, Mary Lou died. I'll buy the paper today. I know Mary Lou.
I want to go backward just a little bit. When we talked earlier about you expanding your coverage beyond your Jewish focus and doing that. When you started doing that, when you came in, you said you've been there 10 years now. Was there pushback at all? Did you get some pushback?
There had been
such a niche thing that
there was a lot of pushback, and I also brought along the Associated Press Wire. And that is unheard of for a weekly, let alone a Jewish weekly. And there was a lot of pushback, like, what do you need AP for? We already had two Jewish wire services. So I said, yeah, that gave us different content, feet on the ground in the Middle East, feet on the ground in the State House, things we couldn't cover. Gave us, put us more competitive with our colleagues in the field.
Was that a tough debate for you on the whether to bring in AP? I was an editor in the early 2000s for a small twice weekly paper. And I always, and even like when 9/11 happened, it was still a debate. Do I put the AP story in with it?
Well, I'm saying we use the AP online a lot. We use it as background, and we're 99.9% local in our publication. So we'll have one world page. If there's a world story, we'll try to localize it. And if AP has something, but it's really helped us with breaking news recently and always. And we just picked up AP in our Columbus paper. Finally, we dropped one of our Jewish wire services because AP, we needed that for our online content and in print. But as far as the secular coverage, why are you covering a council meeting? I said, why not? Well, nobody cares. I said, you have seven Jewish council people and a Jewish mayor in a city of 89.95% Jews. I think everything they do is of interest. Okay, we took that to the next community. Why are we covering a zoning issue in a community with, 20% Jews? Well, 20% are our readers. And the biggest change, Nick, is the Daily and the Weekly. They're owned by the same company. The Weeklies went from 28 down to like 8. They have one page of local news. They usually run the daily newspaper stuff in there. They're not covering the communities. And we've started to elevate ourselves. We had a situation where it was a world story where there were three young ladies who were held kidnapped in their basement for 10 years. And by a fluke, they got out. Somebody saw them next door, whatever. The man was caught. The attorneys defending that perpetrator, they were two Jewish people. We didn't know this at the time. So we worked on trying to interview them. And we eventually scored the interview. Associated Press picked up that story. And I didn't know these attorneys at all. And I asked them one day when they were leaving the office, I said, why did you guys talk to us? You just told us you turned down Anderson Cooper, Tokyo, Japanese Broadcasting. They've been following around. You told them to go home. There's no stories. Why did you give us the story? And their reason was twofold. You're not the weddings and engagements newspaper anymore, and we trust and respect your reporters. And we had a great reporter that gained the trust of these people. And that's, everybody wants to be on Anderson Cooper. They want to be on Japanese Broadcasting. These people didn't want to. Some reason, they gave us the story. And I think that goes the trust, the respect, and then you get the credibility.
Yeah, I think that's a good theme, I think, for us today. And as we look to, like I said, I'm hoping that we can use this podcast a little bit as a way for people in our industry to talk about that, rebuilding that trust and kind of changing that narrative. And I know that's a huge task, and there's a million tentacles of it. But I think there are little things we can do, and some of that is just being back in our communities and walking our beats like the old way we used to do it.
What is, I don't want to have a political police discussion, but a lot of communities, unfortunately, are suffering issues with their local police departments. Who's in the police car now? It's one person, probably started yesterday, doesn't know the community, doesn't know those players. When we were growing up, it was two policemen in a vehicle. It was a foot patrolman. He popped in the stores. He knew the kids. And I think, you're not going to have trouble when the local policeman's standing there at the corner and he knows you. Policemen used to do traffic control. Now you hire a school guard to do that. So that's, there's really no one answer to anything. There's always exceptions to rules. But again, you got to get these young reporters, stop, you know, thinking they're going to come in and be columnists and bloggers. And, you know, they got to tweet from the games. You know, they got to tweet, you know, as soon as they get to the game. They got to take a pic. They got to do this. Go down there. Talk to the football coach. Talk to the police chief. That instance I was telling you about the shooting at the hotel, I went out to take pictures. My reporter was in the office. I had my reporter calling the police chief every half hour. What's going on? My photographer is out there. And all of a sudden I see the TV crews run up to a nursing or an office building. They all ran up there like there was a Chinese fire drill. They had no clue what they were going up there for. But somehow there was a police car going there. So I asked my reporter, I said, call the police chief. Why are all these people going up there? Do I need to be over there or should I stay here? And then I watched the news. Police chief not available for comment today. Oh, we had commented all day. There was another instance where there was a shooting at the local mall and the guy escaped and there was a manhunt. This was a manhunt. And there was a TV helicopter overboard and everything. And then all of a sudden, you know, I'm asking a cop. They don't like to say anything. It's like, I notice you guys are cleaning up. The dogs are leaving. What's going on? He says, can't tell you anything. And this is like 7:30, 8 o'clock at night. I call the police chief on his cell phone. And I said, chief, I'm out here. What's going on? Everybody's leaving. He goes, Bob, manhunt's called off. Go on home. TV stations could have stayed there all night. But that is the trust we have with the police chief. He knows we're going to be fair and square when we report. He knows we're going to cover this. He knows we're going to call him. And he's doing his job by providing the information. And it's a two-way street, and there's trust there.
Yeah, I that goes right back to that whole theme of be in your beat, be in your community. Let those people know who you are and know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. I want to hit one more topic before we wrap up. And I didn't have this idea beforehand. It was just as you were talking, but I think this is gonna fit in. You brought up the you know, the big national international conversation right now is on Israel and the Palestinian. I don't know enough to know enough. I have two Jewish friends and I have one friend who is Palestinian and grew up in Gaza Strip. From your perspective, from what you guys are doing, though, is that, you know, you talked about you've covered the Palestinian rallies and as well, but what, as the Jewish newspaper in two pretty major communities, you know, how do you approach that and how do you talk to your people to make sure not only you're representing the community that you cover, but then you also want to make sure you tell the whole story? Is it difficult, the biases there, the innate biases that we all have from whatever our perspective is? I kind of want to know just your approach to that as both you personally and as your organization.
As a journalist, it's easy. It's easy to cover this story or that story. And what I tell everybody is, as long as we're being fair, we're getting a comment from both sides. We're writing it down the middle. Yes, we support Israel. There's no doubt about it. But if a Palestinian wants to run a letter to the editor and it meets our qualifications, and we're very broad, it's a maximum word count and you don't libel somebody and you prove the facts, we're going to run it. We're not going to keep it out of the publication. That doesn't sit well with some people. But my belief is, if we're not sharing both sides of the aisle, how are people ever going to try to understand? And there's some great dialogue going on, you know, behind the scenes in Cleveland and other places, you know, outside of the Jewish news. But again, if let's say you and I disagree on who the best, you know, it comes back to sports.
Right.
If you and I disagree on who's the best basketball player ever in the NBA, you tell me it's Jordan. I tell you it's LeBron. If you put your hand up and say, I don't want to hear anything you have to say, we're never going to have a dialogue. We're never going to have a discussion. You know, I might be right, I might be wrong, but you ought to at least hear why I think LeBron is the greatest, and I ought to hear why Michael's the greatest, and then let's have that argument. You know, LeBron did this, Michael did that. LeBron didn't do this, Michael didn't do that. And then at the end of the day, we've got that dialogue out there, and if we don't give them that or make it available to people, you're only going to get one side of the story in whatever publication or or anywhere you are. And, you know, TV, we know it's a 30-second sound bite and a clip and, you know, somebody throwing a rock at somebody. That's the news. There's no getting into why that rock was thrown. That's the news.
The reason I ask is because I think, you know, we've all had these discussions before about, you know, one of the hard things is everybody can choose their news. They can choose the silos of the things they want to read and the things they want to read about. And I asked about it to dig in a little bit because of your base readership. And do you get pushback from your readers in trying to be that? I mean, I think it's a responsibility of ours as journalists to force people not to silo things in these conversations. Has it been difficult for you at all to do that with your readers?
I wouldn't know if it was difficult. It's part of our job. We've been, you know, myself and some others, we've been doing it for so long. We talk to a lot of other Jewish publications, and they have a different vision of, is this, you know, going to impact the Jews badly? Is this going to not fairly show them? Is this going to be what we call in Jewish world, Loshon Hara, which is gossiping? And I came out at one time and I said, we had to tell that kosher butcher story. It was Loshon Hara. You have impacted the Jewish community. You hurt that guy's future. I said, we didn't do any of this. We reported it. You shouldn't have. We had a prominent Jewish family write a letter in support of, you know, peace and siding with the Palestinians, saying they go there often and they talk to them and they're, you know, calm, normal people. Nobody's disputing any of that. Everybody wants, you know, almost everybody wants the same thing. But, you know, when you run that, and if you're going to say you can't run that opposing viewpoint because it doesn't agree with me, but we've had that with other issues. People mm-hmm. don't think we should be covering the Beachwood mayor like we're covering it. And I live in that community. And I said, that has nothing to do with anything. Well, you don't have to print a story that you don't want to print. I said, we absolutely have to print a story because it's not about me.
That happens all the time.
You know, it's not about me. What do you want us to do? Print the weddings, engagements again? It's not about me and what I like. And we had a previous mayor, and I said, if he goes to jail, I want to have that story on the top of our front page. I don't want to read it somewhere else. That's, you know, I like the guy, I don't like the guy. It really doesn't matter. But if we treat everybody fairly and get the word out, if somebody wants to write us a letter, you know, supporting the Palestinian cause, if it meets our criteria, I have no problem running it. I know people will have a problem running it. But what is the problem with running that? Wouldn't you want a pro-Jewish letter in a Middle Eastern newspaper? And again, if they don't want to run it, that's a deeper problem.
Do you think that we have a responsibility as journalists to, and I don't know if this is changing because of where we're at now in the world in the context of today, but do you think we have a responsibility to facilitate uncomfortable conversations, to push things about some of these topics, whether you're talking about the conflict in the Middle East, whether we're talking about race, gender discussions, all of these things that are at the forefront right now in our contextual conversations, whether through reporting, whether through publishing letters, whether through hosting town hall events, do we as the community papers, big or small, have a responsibility to facilitate and push those conversations on the things that are uncomfortable?
Absolutely. We are doing that with our Black community here. We started last year when the Black Lives Matters rallies and protests and marches were going on. We covered a lot of them that were happening, not even in Jewish communities, but we covered them because the Jews are involved. They might be there, you know, protesting and rallying or supporting the cause. But we also launched a column in our op-ed page that we made available to people that were victims of hatred, the Black community growing up. We had a Black spokesperson from a college write one or two pieces. We had a mayor from a neighboring community that has very few Jews write for us to let our community know how it was when they grew up. And they faced the same things that a lot of the Jewish people faced then and still face today. So we were telling those stories. And yeah, that's something for a Jewish community paper to do something like that. Again, Kevin Adelstein's idea to come up with that. You know, we could write 100 op-eds, or we don't write op-eds, we don't write editorial columns. We're nonpartisan, but we can go out and ask every Jewish person, which is 80,000 of them, and we could ask every rabbi to write a column. At the end of the day, what is that going to, you know, what does that mean if we get 17 rabbis writing columns every Friday on their support for Israel? Does anybody really care at the end of the day? But what if we put one, you know, black person's comment or somebody else's comment? Now we're opening that door to what you're saying is, what's our responsibility? And I think, again, we've talked about the light topics of sports and we've gotten to news. What is a newspaper's responsibility? At the end of the day, it used to be to inform and entertain. Is it now just to get clicks on the internet?
Here's what I think, and I know we're pressing on time here, but here's what I'm going to say to that is, look, we can't discount the importance of the clicks. We can't. I mean, it's always been about audience. Even when we were just print, it's always still we package things. Look, I came up as a designer too, right? I spent a lot of my career. That was packaging to get the audience so that you saw what was above the fold in the rack and you grabbed the paper. Mm-hmm. But we have to still use it as get the audience so that we can inform and, yes, entertain some, but inform. I think that's the responsibility, right? Is an informed citizenry that goes to the polls informed and makes those choices the best choices for that community. And we have a saying on a local news podcast I do in my community: you can affect more change here in your backyard than you can anywhere else. And that's why we do the local news and we talk about those issues.
Good points. Yep. I think it's, you know, it all comes back to what we said about an hour ago. People can get their news on any national network. Even the local TV news, are there's so much national news there. Your daily newspapers, because of everything we've said, they're more national today. I don't know if they, you know, they want to be the New York Times of every community. And if you look at a lot of papers, they're just reprinting New York Times, Washington Post, LA Times stuff. Reporting staff has dwindled. And I always say the only time that your mayor makes the local newspaper today is if his hands are in your pants or somebody else's pants. When's the last time the local newspaper came out to do a nice feel-good story about two kids and a lemonade stand? That's what we do here, in addition to everything else.
Yeah, those features are just as important as being the watchdog.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Bob Jacob, thank you very much. I appreciate you coming on the News Nirvana podcast.
Thank you, Nick. My pleasure.
All right. We will talk to everybody next time.
The News Nirvana podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or most any of your favorite podcast apps. The News Nirvana podcast is made possible by the generosity of Town News. Connect with Town News at townnews.com. The News Nirvana podcast is produced by Fredcasts. Think, speak, act.